Hola, bueno, mientras todos terminan de entrar, nos encontramos un celular. ¿A alguien se le perdió un celular? Es decir, a alguien se le perdió un celular. Revisen. Entonces, en la oficina de producción que está atrás a la derecha, lo pueden pedir. Estén atentos a sus cosas, por favor. Bueno, nuestra última charla de hoy. Leonard Poe, sonido en el que, perdón, tema en el que todo el mundo está interesadísimo, todos quieren aprender, todos creemos que el futuro está en los videojuegos y no se equivocan. Ustedes saben que la industria de los videojuegos mueve bastante más dinero que la industria del cine de Hollywood y bueno, hay gran interés por esto. Entonces, pues sin hablar más, los dejo con Leonard Poe.
Thank you. Yes, my name is Leonard Paul. I put the J in there so that it's easier to Google. And so my presentation will be on video game audio. And so it's going to be interesting with the transliteration happening. So I will try not to go too quickly for the translator. But at the same time, sometimes I get really involved in what I'm talking about. So it might end up being faster than it should be. But I will try my best. This is the last presentation for today. So after this, I guess you can have dinner and run around and stuff like that. Game audio is something that has definitely come into more popularity these days through various reasons. I started a long time ago, it seems. I started in 1994 of Electronic Arts, and I've been working on and on since in games since then. I guess we should still let people come in, and just for people that have the headsets, the translation is okay so far? Is the level okay? Some people say sí, okay, bueno, todo está bien, okay. So I'll let a few more people sit down. All right, and I'll just keep talking about myself because that's the part that we don't necessarily have to listen to. So the main website where you'll find a lot of my information is at videogameaudio.com. These days, in the modern world, I'm using Twitter. I'm sure it'll change in another 2 years to some other version of Friendster or MySpace or Facebook or whatever it is, you know, for the future. But that's what I'm using right now. So you can see what I've been working on and what I might be working on in the future. So what I do these days is I'm basically a contractor, and so I work at video game companies like Electronic Arts. For those that don't know, Electronic Arts is the biggest interactive entertainment company in the world. That's how they position themselves. As far as, you know, video game companies, they are not necessarily, say, like the biggest if you look at, say, Blizzard or something like that, but they're the company that specifically focuses on video games. They're the biggest one in the world, and one of the largest game studios, if not the largest game studio in the world, is where I live in Vancouver, British Columbia in Canada. So that studio is about, it can have about 1,500 people in it, so 1,500 people. These days it might be a little bit less because of the economy, but that's where I work, and I worked there for 6 months at the start of this year, and these days I'm working on an independent game, which I'll talk about as well, and so that's sort of a brief introduction to who I am. If you want to look at more, you can look at my webpage as far as credits and stuff like that. I've worked on Need for Speed, I've worked on a game called Facebreaker. The most recent game I worked on Electronic Arts, which you might know of right now, is NBA Jam. So as far as the work that I did on that, I was not the composer, but I was the one that took the music that was composed for the game, which was DJ Kimo, or the Vanguards is his production group. And so I took his music and then oriented it so that it would work and dynamically change as the game was being played. So this is an arcade basketball title that's available on the Wii, and I guess it'll be available on the other platforms fairly soon. So that's the most recent title that I worked on, and I'm just working on this game, Retro City Rampage, this independent game right now. Okay? So, like I said, I have a lot of material to go through, and it's sort of odd for me to try and speak slowly with a lot of density, so I'll see if I can get my brain around it. Okay, so this is a still, or a couple stills from the game Facebreaker, and it's just sort of to show an introduction of how to think about, game audio. You know, it can be often very cartoony, at least those are the games that I like working on. I don't necessarily do a lot of, in fact, I've never done a first-person shooter game, and so sort of the idea of, figuring out what kind of sound you want to have for this to make it so that the emotion of that sound fits the gameplay so that the person playing the game really is involved. And a lot of the times in games we talk about immersion, how much they are present in that particular game world. It's the same thing as when you're working in film. You don't want the person to sort of be sitting down and going like, whoa, wait a minute. I've just been sitting in this dark room for like half an hour. What am I doing here? Jeez, I should, eat something. Or, I don't know. So that's the same thing. You don't want that to happen with games. Eventually somebody has to eat, I suppose, but it's one of those things that you want to make the game compelling enough so that they want to keep playing it. Okay? So that's your primary role while working in games, is to create a seamless experience. So I'll start off with a brief introduction as far as, I guess, the finances behind it and sort of the way that video games are positioned these days. Is this has not always been the case. I gave a talk recently at another university in Canada, and just saying, like, when I started in games, basically saying that you played video games or even worked in video games was basically the same thing as saying you play like Dungeons and Dragons, right? It was that weird. I mean, so these days it's quite funny because everybody, and quite literally their grandma, is playing games. So these days it's a lot more accepted, but when I got started, it was definitely not that case. Like, I started in 94, which is, we're working on the Super Nintendo Entertainment System at those days, and the Sega Genesis, and so those were very limited platforms. Nowadays, you can have a very sort of true-to-life experience with, all the graphics and sound that are happening these days. So if you look at the dollar values here, the weekend sales for Grand Theft Auto 4, sort of arguably the most popular title of all time, exceeded $500 million in weekend sales. Of course, you have to realize that they can pre-sell a lot of games. And this is versus the Dark Knight movie, which is the most sort of the title that's made the most money as far as movies in history, and they topped $159 million for their weekend opening. So this sort of looks like games make more money than films, but it's simply not the case if you look at the fact that there's DVD sales, rentals, television rights, all those kind of things that are associated, with film. So if you're concentrating in film, you don't necessarily have to say, oh, I'm going to work in video games because look at how much more money there is. It's not really the case. The thing is that most of my friends that work in audio, they will split their time between working on commercials, the work in video games, and the work in film, and the work in television, and maybe even music. So if you want to make a stable career in audio, one of the best things to do is to diversify. And so knowing a little bit about video games, hopefully, if not starting from before this talk, but hopefully this talk will help you sort of investigate that, because I'm sure that everybody in the room would like to make some money working in audio, all right? So the growing markets in games these days are digital downloads and online gaming. And I just recently read a report that digital downloads for PC has actually exceeded that of retail sales. So now there's not even a box involved with these games. You just download them and, you can play the game. And so it reduces, of course, waste as far as all these DVDs and things that just get thrown away once you install the game, and all the packaging and all the inventory. So for me, this is a good thing. And the most recent game I'm working on is a Wii downloadable title. So it's within that sort of downloadable games kind of area. And that's a thing that's expanding with the new consoles, being the PlayStation 3, the 360, and the Wii. sort of the focus there. So AAA titles, that basically means sort of like in the video game version, like Hollywood blockbuster, right? Is that we're looking at budgets of $15 million and more. That's quite typical. So Electronic Arts, they spend a lot of money on games to make the games. And for people working on the games, I've worked on teams, well, that are between 50 and they can be up to 100 people working on a game, which is a lot of management issue. So video games these days are a big business. All right. So as far as looking at how much money, you know, one might make in games, a recent salary survey put it at about $75,000 U.S. dollars, okay? And that's if you're, you know, in the U.S. It's a bit less in most parts of the world, but that's, I mean, it sort of gets skewed towards people that live in California, which is fine. And then sound designers and composers earn an average of $82,000 U.S. per year, so that's quite good. But the thing from this statistic that you have to look at is that often people that are making that kind of money are have been working in games maybe 5 years or more. But at the same time, the survey also found that there's a lot of people just entering the game market as well, like, sorry, the working within games in audio. So this is there's almost a split. There's a lot of people that have worked in the industry for a while, and then also there's a lot of new people coming in. So that's good news for you. Okay, so here's sort of an overview looking at games. The thing that's different about games versus film is really the technical side. So in film, you don't have to think so much about, you know, the software side of things. In games, you always do. So really, there's a split between the creative, you know, the artistic side of making the game, and the sound, and then the technical side of how you're actually going to get that sound to work and play back and change so that it fits the game, right? And even at a higher level, not just to get it to play back, because that's kind of boring just to trigger things, it's a tricky thing to make that sound come alive in the game. So I'm going to go through a couple examples of things that I've sort of, you know, that are good examples of how to do that in games. A thing that I won't spend a lot of time on is sort of the management side of games, you know, balancing your time, the money, and resources. Okay, that's more sort of if you're running your own business or if you're a contractor, right? And so the goal is really to combine the technical side and the creative side to create this seamless experience for the player, okay? And that's really where the fun part of games comes in, is that it's a tricky thing to balance both of these things. My background is such that I have a computing degree, and then I got more into the content side of things. I was always interested in doing music and sound design, and to be able to combine that with games was just seemed like a really good fit. These days I'm also working a little bit in graphics too, because it's pretty fun stuff as well. So really, if you break down the creative side, it's exactly the same thing as film, right? We've got sound effects. You need to set the design, right? What kind of style are you going to go for? Is it going to be, you know, cartoony? Is it going to be hyper-realistic? You need to figure out how to record the sound properly. If you're going to generate the sound, you know, what kind of synthesis are you going to use? How are you going to edit the sounds, you know, from your source recordings? What are you going to really focus in on as being sort of the great... really where the core of the sound is and what the strongest sound that you recorded was. Of course, a lot of the times you'll actually just be getting sounds off the sample CD, as you're probably used to, because a lot of the time the budget doesn't necessarily allow you to run around recording every single sound necessary for the game. Although I know that some games, they've really focused on that. Of course, you know, you've got games like Halo, Gears of War, and they've really wanted to make very original sounds and tried not to use a lot of library sounds for that. There's compositing. That's how you add two sounds together, sort of mixing them and figuring out how they work, you know, in a timeline. And then mastering them. Mastering, you know, as you probably know, just means to really make that sound come alive and sound the best on the platform that it's playing on. So if you're making a game for the 360, you will master that sound differently than you would for if you're going to play it on the Nintendo DS. On the Nintendo DS, the sampling rate's not as good, and you're going to also compress the sound using different methods. So what you'll want to do is you'll actually want to put a little bit of emphasis into that sound on the high end to, you know, sort of bump it above sort of sounding really muddy, whereas on the 360 side, you can probably just leave it as it is. For speech, you're going to figure out what characters you want. You got to make a script, and then casting, figuring out what actor you're going to combine with which character. And then with music, you know, these are all creative things. You figure out what mood you want to set, the emotional underscore, the pacing, how fast the music is going to be, how dense the music is going to be, the genre, you know, is it going to be sort of, once again, is it going to be more cartoony, kind of Warner Brothers or Carl Stalling, or is it going to be more sort of, you know, John Williams kind of, you know, sounding like Star Wars and all that other stuff, right? Spotting, you're going to figure out where, what points in the game need music and specific cues. It's always going to be difficult because you won't know how a person will arrive there. If it's an open world game, the thing is with film, you'll always know what's happening before that. And so you can build up anticipation and then boom, you've got a big music moment. Whereas in games, it's more like you hit a spot and then you trigger things. So it's very hard to make things that are that anticipate. It's always easier to make things that are reactionary. And unfortunately, that's where a lot of the discrepancy between the quality, sort of the aesthetic or the creative quality of you know, film audio versus game audio is. Because game audio, you just don't know what's going to happen. You don't know how fast that person's going to turn around the corner. And like if it's going to be like wet pavement, you know, one of 60 different cars they're going to be driving, you know, there's just this amount of, you know, I think in Bungie referred to the people that create Halo, they refer to it like once you have a couple of these different things to combine, which car and then like what road type and then weather, basically you've got these different axes that produce this. What's basically like a matrix of hell. Like, there's all these different combinations. So it's like car number one on wet, car number two on wet, car number three on wet, and then you go through the same thing on dry, the same thing, you know, depending on how fast they're going. So it's there's a huge amount of combinations that you have to keep in your head when you're working with games. Okay, getting back to music again. Composing, right, in my case also remixing. Instrumentation, what instruments are you going to use to best represent the music? Arrangement, the best way of arranging the notes for those particular instruments, and then, of course, you know, recording. And then the technical side, this is probably a little bit more of... This is probably a bit more sort of a new thing for you. So really what you're trying to do is figuring out how to attach the sound, the recorded sound. Often you've got a sample a lot of the times in games. That's where, how we typically start. And how you attach it to the physics engine. Like if you've got a car, how fast are the wheels turning? Like each of those four wheels, what's the angle? Like are you skidding halfway on gravel? Are you half on pavement? What are the angles? Are you skidding sideways? You know, like how fast are you going? Did you like hit a jump and are you landing? How long are you skidding for? Like these are all things that are generated by the physics engine and you need to figure out, okay, I went out and I recorded like 2 hours worth of me skidding around a corner. Or, you know, hopefully a professional driver. Then you got to figure out how to edit that content and make it so that it triggers properly in the game. Right? This is tricky stuff. And then speech. How to make the speech that you've recorded sound intelligent. So, like, if anybody's played a first-person shooter, it's a typical sort of, hey, over here, over here. Hey, over here, over here. Hey, and once it hits the third time, you're like, ah. You know, it breaks the illusion. So really what you want to do to make it sound more intelligent is like, hey, over here, hello, over here. You know, like you can have the guy or whoever's saying it change their intonation so that it makes more sense and it feels like you're still in the world, right? This is not an easy thing to do as well. And then music, how a song responds dynamically and emotionally to the game. So even when working with a basketball game, I had three different levels of music that I was working with. I was working with where if you're not playing very well in NBA Jam, really it plays a very sort of simple, not very ornamented score. If you start, you know, getting a couple jams in, you get to a couple turnovers, you know, and on turnovers, it'll actually do like a little DJ effect. It'll actually do like a little record grab. Same thing for dunks as well. So when you do a big dunk, it'll actually, it sounds like it's basically changing the playback rate and making it sound like as a DJ, you're grabbing like the tone control, right? And those kind of interactive things really make it so that you feel like the music is reacting to your gameplay. And then the thing is that if you're doing really well in NBA Jam, if you've ever played it, that you actually go on fire. So the ball goes on fire, you dunk it, like the net goes on fire, and the music actually sounds like it goes on fire too. So there's actually a bit of synthesis and stuff that I put in there that's generated from noise, and then it's just like it's like this burning sort of flame sort of shooting out between like when the beats are happening. And also the music is super loud too. The drumming starts getting more intense. All those kind of things. And this is just like an arcade basketball game, right? So you can imagine what they're doing in more advanced games like that are open world and things like that. Okay, so once again, this is the technical side of things. Resources, you've got your central processor, okay? And if you really want to do tricky things, then real-time effects like reverb, especially convolution reverb, will take up a lot of processor time. So you have to be very careful with the team if you're going to start really taxing the processor. Then you might actually slow down the processing so much that the frame rate will drop down below. Often 60 frames a second is what we want these days. So speaking as far as all your processing for everything that needs to happen, every single frame has to happen in 16 and a little bit milliseconds, right? So that's a lot of processing that needs to happen. So if you're working in audio, you can guess that you only, for every 60th of a second, you have to get all your audio stuff done in 1/10 of that. So basically every frame you get about a millisecond of time to do all your convolution reverbs, all your streaming off the disc, you know, figuring out what sounds you're going to play, being smart about which dialogue to play. And that is a real challenge. I used to work doing programming for games like Need for Speed Hot Pursuit 2 on the PlayStation 2. And as far as RAM, you've got, for audio, you've got 2 megabytes of RAM, right? So 2 megs, if you think about that, and you could compress it 80 PCM, which is the compression format. It's like MP3, but sort of a cheaper version. You could compress about 3.5 times to 1. So it really meant that, you know, 2 times 3.5, I'm not even going to try. Let's just guess and say 10 megabytes or so, right? And so you have 10 megs at any given moment that you can refer to quickly for producing audio. Whereas these days, you know, you've got the Xbox 360, you know, and also the PlayStation 3. The PlayStation 3 even has 1 of the 7 cores dedicated to audio. So you're able to get, well, then the memory is 0.5 gigs worth. So even if you get 32 megs out of that, which is quite useful, you know. So 32 megs, but the compression ratio now is like MP3. You take 32, you multiply it by 10, you get about 320. So these days, you get access to almost like 1/2 an hour's worth of audio like that, which is great. So I'm trying to cram everything onto, you know, like a postage stamp size piece of RAM. Unless you're working on the DS and the other handheld platforms, which is pretty fun too, and also the iPhone too. So hard drive, this is another place you can put stuff. You know, it's fast, but the space is limited. And then we've got flash RAM. It's fast, and like the new 360, I guess, is supporting more built-in flash RAM. So you could store audio there. Usually that's for save games, but it's more for downloadable games to allow you to put that on there. So yeah, once again, it's fast, but the space is small. And then the disc, Blu-ray disc, on a PlayStation 3, you can store 50 gigabytes of information. It's a lot. Imagine how much audio you can put there. That's great, but the thing is that the PlayStation 3 is also 7.1, right? So if you're going to record a lot of 7.1 full resolution ambiences, you can actually chew through that disk space. So, but that's also another great thing about, you know, being in the industry and even coming into the industry is that people are looking for a way to fill up the disk space, and audio is actually a great way to do it, right? So, I mean, that might be something interesting to do, is to actually, you know, as a project, to do 7.1 surround recordings. I don't know how many there are out there, but it would be an interesting thing to market. And then you could also pick up stuff off the web, but of course, the company that's supplying this information has to pay for that. So that's not done that often. Usually the download happens, and then that's it. You're not streaming, say, sound, music tracks off of their servers. Okay, so those are the different places you can keep audio. And if you're working a lot in audio, this is really what the balance is, trying to figure out if your ambience is going to go in RAM, is it going to go on the hard drive, is it going to stay on disk, like what are you going to do? Okay, so these are some design things. This is more higher level. So when working technically, either we can design from a top-down or bottom-up approach. So top-down, it really means you're thinking of everything artistically first. So you're going to figure out, okay, this is my idea, this as far as an artistic idea, and these are the tools that I have to make it with. And really, a lot of the times, at every step you go down, you're eliminating things that simply aren't possible because of the technical limitations. Whereas you can design from the bottom up, and you can say, okay, the Nintendo DS is capable of, you know, these things, and so I'm going to make sure that all my sound design, all my music, all my speech will work from that, and then I'll figure out, you know, how the game design is going to work within that. But I'm going to consider the constraints at the beginning. And oftentimes you'll go between those two things. But I think it's a good thing to figure out that actually is a design process, that you're either figuring out things artistically from the top or more technically from the bottom. Okay, so yeah, these are some technical ideas. You know, you discover the limits of the software and hardware and push them. You know, expand the software capabilities and design, you know, the tools to suit the game. These are things once you start working in a company that you'll go like, I was working at a game company where I couldn't change the sound, the volume of the sound after it got started. Sounds kind of weird, doesn't it? But it's actually quite common. So I asked them to change it. I pleaded for them to change it, and they didn't change it. So then you have to start figuring out, okay, if sounds are going to trigger like this, then sometimes you might actually build in a little bit of a tail to them so that maybe they fade out so that you don't have to worry about all these loud sounds happening and blurring together. Okay? And then, yeah, realize that, you know, you're competing with the rest of the game team for resources. So this is not really the way that it works with film. With film, it's just like, you know, whatever, the audio guy, you go out there and record it, and then you come into the, you know, you do your audio post, and then, you know, various editors work on it, and you're very separate from the rest of the production team. Whereas with games, you're definitely, like, fighting for RAM, especially. So a lot of the times what you'll do is, you know, you might not necessarily get the licensed music at the beginning, but you kind of know that it's going to be maybe 10 songs or something. So then you kind of, you know, in an early process, you put in 15 songs. Because they're always going to start whittling away. And so you really have to fight for space and processing power as well. So once again, something that doesn't happen in film is that, you know, like you don't show up to a film mix and then you're looking at the screen. It's like, oh, wow, great. So it's black and white today. Whereas that happens in games a lot. You'll have this thing. It's like, okay, when I was working on Need for Speed, we had one guy working on the engines. He was working with our engine model. And then this was at Black Box. And then Electronic Arts bought out the company, and they said, oh, actually, there's this game engine or sound engine that we can use for the cars. It sounds way better than yours. So just throw away all your stuff and start over again. So he had been editing car engine loops for like half a year and getting them all tuned and perfect within this one game engine. And he had to not throw all of it out, but a lot of the work was lost, right? So these are things that technically can change, like that with a game that doesn't really happen with film. So this is, if you are someone that thrives on change and is okay with being thrown something new to learn and figure out and problem solve, then games is a good, you know, it's a good place for you to be. If you're the kind of person that really kind of goes like, yeah, okay, I got my 8 hours, I'm going to do this, I'm going to get like a reel and a half worth of audio done today or whatever it is, then film is probably a better space for you. But within games, you can also make audio for games and not have to do all this technical stuff as well. So if you're not really technically minded, it's not a problem, but it's still good to know a little bit about the job of the programmers and the people that are going to be putting your audio into the game, because it's really like, I don't even know a parallel, it's really you're handing off your creation to someone else and hoping that they're going to continue your artistic vision. Okay, so these are some, once again, high-level ideas. You know, organization. So over-prepare for the worst. You know, you got to work well with your coder. This is your programmer, the person that's going to be putting your music directly into the game. At larger game studios, and these days, the tools and techniques have gotten a lot more refined, so that the amount of coding that needs to get done to add sounds to games has become a lot less. So you won't actually need as much help as you did before, but that also means that you have to do a lot more work, okay? And then the producer is the person that basically figures out, you know, like, do you have enough money? Is there enough time to do this kind of schedule and all those kind of things? Yeah. So, yeah, a good process can be found by making all the right mistakes once. You know, don't be smart about your mistakes. And then, you know, take risks is a huge thing in games as well. If you're just going to do what everybody else has done before you, then it'll sound like everything else before you. And it's the same thing in film and almost any other work, really. But with games, it really pays off to do new things that you're like, oh, this should maybe work. Let's sort of try it out. This is a huge thing. My last point here, it's, I don't know if I'm bitter or something, but audio is always last. You know, so be prepared for feature drop. In other words, things that you really spend a lot of time working on that actually just get thrown away, right? I mean, this happens in film too. There's whole scenes that get thrown away, you know, and then there's, you know, no money, right? Often, by the time you get to an end of the project, you know, it's just like, oh yeah, actually we spend our whole budget, so maybe you could get a lot of money in royalties, right? You've probably heard this before. Whereas with games, it's not really possible to get royalties. There's just not really it's not a structure in place for that. So you really have to get paid off the top, unless you're going to get paid through unit sales and stuff, which is possible. And then, unfortunately, yeah, no love. At the end of it, everybody's tired, burnt out, angry, and they just want it to be over. And then you're like, oh, excuse me, I would like to be able to... And they're just like, oh, gosh. Just get it done, right? So... But that also is the challenge, yeah? So what I want to do is sort of give you some ideas of some examples. I haven't worked on this game, but I wanted to sort of give my examples in some sort of context. So the idea here is that, yeah, Red Dead Redemption is a modern game, really recent. That's a Western action game, sort of like Grand Theft Auto, but with horses, right? So sort of. It's not exactly that. It's quite a good game. It's gotten great reviews. And so what I want to do is show you some examples using a prototyping tool known as Pure Data. And maybe what I'll do first is... No, actually, maybe I'm going to try to bounce back and forth between my presentation and the demos, and then we'll see if that works or not. It's always scary doing live demos. Okay, so all of these will sort of be in reference to sort of, you know, cowboys and video games. All right, so simple ambience. You know, when you're playing this kind of game, you've got the tumbleweeds in the distance, you've got, you know, wolves, you've got some horses, those kind of things, right? So the creative challenge is how do you make an interesting sounding ambience that can be heard for a long time? Because you're always fighting disk space and whatnot, is that something that you would never do in film. In film, what you do is if your ambience isn't long enough, you checkerboard it, right? You know, so you have this one, and then you take another track, and then you crossfade. And so you kind of do that in video games, is where you actually will loop ambiences. You might have heard this in actual games, where you've maybe only got 15 seconds worth of disk space or memory, and then it'll start, you know, say, oh, yeah, I've heard that before. Especially if you've ever listened, like, to sports games with crowds. A lot of the times you'll hear, like, there's, like, woo-woo, and then, like, 15 seconds later, woo-woo. Like, it's really hard to edit those things out. Trust me, I've worked with crowds, and it's tricky. So the technical challenge is figuring out how to fit it into memory, data compression. So are you going to use XMA compression? This is, like, a compression format for the 360. You know, making it a seamless loop so that there's not a pop or a tick that happens. You know, mixing it at the right level. Making it so that it transitions correctly to the next area. So you've got a windy area, and then you're going to an area that maybe the wind goes from sort of open space wind to more sort of, you know, like where there's buildings and there's more possibility for the wind to whistle and stuff like that. How do you crossfade between those two? Okay? So, yeah, loop editing. I use a program called WaveLab. It's sort of the fastest way that I've found, because the nice thing is that you can audition loops, live audition them while you're changing the loop points. So the typical thing is you figure the start end, the zero crossing point, so you don't get clicks. If you overlap two pieces of audio, it'll auto crossfade those for you. It'll also figure out what's called crossfade looping. And what this is it takes a little bit of the end part of the loop and it mixes it with the start part of the loop, so that it basically, like, if you think about the way that analog tape used to be, you know, pretend here's a bit of analog tape, and then you make a loop out of it, you instead of doing a butt fade, like a cut like that, you actually do a cross cut. And so you mix a little bit of the start and the end together for that. And that program will do that automatically. You also have to be smart about volume. So if you've got a loop that has a large volume swell at the end, it'll sound weird if it goes, you know, you have to make things that are sort of consistent. Otherwise, you'll really hear the loop. And then spectral editing is nice, too. If there's a bit of hiss or hum or a sort of distortion in the high frequencies, that if you do spectral editing, you can actually see that in the spectrogram. Whereas if you look at the wave output the way that we normally look at audio, that you won't actually see that. So it's nice to be able to edit that kind of stuff out. Okay, so maybe what I'll do is I'll try and jump over here. So, okay, layered ambience. So this is sort of, you know, a step above our simple ambience. So the layered ambience is made up of several different loops. And probably these loops will not be the same length. So they're what's called, you know, we've sort of called them asymmetric loops. So they're not the same length. So that means that this loop will not loop at the same time. So you won't get those rhythms that will happen at the same time. And so it masks where the loop points are. So a country ambience for this game could consist of frogs, wind, birds, and flies, right? And so it would be neat to have these react to the player. So if they shoot a gun, then the frogs would go away and the birds. And then eventually you'd hear the frogs come back slowly. And then eventually you'd start hearing some more birds and stuff like that. And then the flies and the wind sound would be sort of inversely proportional. So if it's really windy out, you won't hear a lot of flies, right? So I am going to attempt. Okay, ooh, look at that, perfect. Okay, so this is pure data. I think here you're taught a little bit about that, is that right? Anyone? Have I been lied to? Have you seen pure data before? Okay, I see a couple nods. All right, some people have taken that class. Okay, so the neat thing about PD, or pure data, is that it's open source, and it allows you to do implementation, meaning defining the behavior of sound, which is kind of neat. It's not really possible to do that in Pro Tools or in WaveLab. You can do a little bit in Ableton Live with changing the loops and the percentages and stuff like that, but really this is allowing you to have full control over the audio, which is it's pretty neat. So the problem is, of course, it's also tricky to learn. So let's see if I can pull up the right one here. So country ambience. Ah, yeah, here we go. So do a little sound check there. Okay, so if we've got our loops, I'm going to start out, I guess, with frogs. Okay, so there's, you know, little froggies there. And then we're going to add some wind. Okay. We'll put the wind around there, say. There's a little bit of flies mixed in there, too. Okay, and then what we can do is that instead of having a loop, we can make it so that out of a container, like out of various different bird recording sounds, maybe like 10 of them or something like that, it'll randomly pick which, you know, like a bird sound to play. So I'll turn that on here. And hopefully we'll start hearing some birds. Okay, so you can see when that little purple thingy next to the birds flashes, that's when it's triggering a new sample for the bird sound. Okay, maybe what I'll do is I'll turn it a little bit down because I think the gunshot is actually really loud. So I'll turn this down a little bit, and we'll pretend that what happens is that the player is walking through the countryside and then fires his gun or her gun, right? Okay. So the frogs are scared of that, birds are scared of that, but then eventually you can see the volume level for the frogs is coming back up again, and there's the frogs. These frogs are pretty cocky, right? These are tough frogs. They don't care about shotguns. And then eventually you start getting the birds again, right? So it's kind of neat. These are things that you need to do in games all the time, is to figuring out, like these little problems of how you make the sound react to the gameplay. Because if you're, if you're thinking about if you're in the country and you discharge a firearm, like if you fire your gun, you would kind of expect there to be less bird sounds, right? Because they would fly off because they don't want to get shot. So anyways, this is a little patch just to demonstrate that. Okay, so that's, yeah, like a layered ambience. And hopefully I can get these things to stop triggering. So we might hear some of these things in the background eventually. Oh, here we go. And then still got flies. Okay, bye-bye flies. Okay, so I'll go back to here. Okay, so this is procedural sound design. We're figuring out a procedure or like a behavior in which we're going to make the sound change depending on what the player does. So based on real-time rules and behaviors. So this is all happening as the game's being played, right? So this has been used in games since the beginning. I mean, this is something that, in the first, turn around, like, you think of Space Invaders, right? Like that, evil half-step piece of music, right? So what happened with that piece of music is that it would get faster and faster when there was less enemies, and also the enemies would come down faster. And the funny thing is that that was a byproduct of simply not having to compute, 20 or 30 different moving things. Like back in the arcade game era, the processing power was maybe like 1 megahertz or even less than that. And so that was actually a byproduct. But the neat thing is that emotionally that kind of works. Because that sound, it kind of, it sounds like, Jaws, right? It's that evil halftone, right? Okay, so what we can do with games is we can combine samples with synthesis. It doesn't happen a lot, but, that's something that I'm working on these days, figuring out different synthesis methods to combine with samples or to bend samples, like granular synthesis or granulation, to make it so that the samples fit the game better. So one of the ways to figure out, the problem with samples is that they're like a picture. They're a very good two-dimensional kind of snapshot in time of a particular sound event. But the thing is that with games, that sound event is changing all over the place. So the sample that you want to stick to that sound, say if the example of the car going around the corner, is that, if the car goes around the corner and they go around twice as long, if you triggered a sound right at the beginning of that saying car skidding around corner, is that if somebody went way longer, then your sample would be way out of sync, right? So you have to figure out, procedural ways to make it so that those samples fit the image, right? And that's the tricky part, is to bend those samples to your will. And synthesis is sometimes a better way than using samples of doing that. So it's really sort of the same thing as thinking about the way that graphics went from sort of two-dimensional to three-dimensional, right? So the three-dimensional stuff, it's like you're synthesizing, it's not real. You're synthesizing those images in real time, the same way that you can do with audio. But these days we're still stuck a lot of the times in this two-dimensional kind of audio realm. So it allows the idea is to allow the flexibility of these layers, being the frogs and stuff, so you don't print those together. You want those guys all to be separate so that you have more flexibility when you're playing the game. Another example is time of day ambience. So a city ambience could be horses, dogs, distant wolves, and crows. They could react to the actual time of day, right? So the crows and the wolves would trigger randomly with more crows during the day and wolves during the night, right? Horses would be more present during the day. Dogs would be more sort of in the morning and early evening hours. So if you're using this piece of software called Wyze by Audio Kinetic, it's a Canadian company, it's a very popular piece of middleware, and I'll go over it a little bit later. It's a good piece of software to learn. But in Pure Data, let's see if I can show you an example. So we don't need this one anymore. Here we go. So this one would be town ambience, I guess. Okay, so let me see if I can sort of talk about this a bit. Okay, let me see here. So that's working?
Yeah.
And so for translation, is that working as well? I just want to double check. Are you able to hear the mic? It's good? Okay, yeah, so I'm looking into the light and I can see a blur. Okay, so if we look here, it's just easier for me than using the pointer. is that we've got traffic, and that's meaning, you know, back, 100 or 200 years ago, well, I mean, I guess 100 years ago, that's like horse traffic, right? So those are our horses, then we've got dogs. Oh, I also added crickets, then we've got crows and wolves, okay? So what I've done here is that each one of these here corresponds, like if you look up there, I've got a slider that says midnight on the left-hand side, and so what I'm going to do is I'm going to slide the time of day from midnight, and then halfway through, that would be halfway through from midnight through half a day. That would be, noon, right? Yeah. So we've got midnight here, noon in the middle, and then we're basically wrapping around to midnight on the other side. Okay, so you can see here, at the crickets, at midnight, they're quite loud, and as the day progresses, you know, this is around maybe 6 or 7, then the volume level goes down. And you can see that for all of the other ones as well. I'm not quite tall enough, but you know, see, if you look at the dogs, they're kind of asleep, and then as soon as they wake up, you can see that the volume level shoots up there, right? You know, the dog's awake, and he's all happy to tell you stuff, okay? And then after a while, they sort of die down a bit, and then they're sort of active in the night, and then they go to sleep, right? Okay, and that happens to all of those there. Oh, one last thing here is that if you remember from when I was talking about the birds, right? So the birds, it wasn't a loop. What I was doing with the birds is that I was having them try, like, trigger randomly within a certain period of time. And so what I'm doing here is that I'm making it so that not only can I modulate the volume level, but I know it's hard to read there, but it says wolves probability. So this means that the wolves, you'll actually hear them more frequently during that time as well. So it basically makes that sort of wolf sort of ambience more dense, okay? So that's what that bottom one means there. And the same thing for the crows. So we basically got our loops over there on the left-hand side, and then on the right-hand side, we have these ones that are triggering, okay? Turn that off.
There we go. Okay. All right, so let's try this. First thing, let's try the horses. Okay, and we hear nothing, maybe? Oh. Perfect. Okay, so I've got horses. Great. Okay, and then we're going to get some dogs in there. I'm going to put the volume... Actually, maybe what I'll do, turn this guy down a little bit. Volume level all the way up. Oh, actually, I don't need to do that. I can just move the slider at the top, and it'll do it all for me. Ah, there we go. Okay, so it's midnight. Isn't that nice? All right? And then I can just slide this a little bit. And if you watch, see the crows? They're getting, you know, crows are starting to get ready here. I got to make sure that I trigger these guys. So you can hear the wolves in the distance. Eventually you might hear some crows. But you definitely hear wolves. There's our wolves. And as we get, you know, you can see that the time now, it's a bit hard to see, but it's here. It's about 4 o'clock in the morning. So I've got a nice crossfade there. We'll continue on here. 5 o'clock in the morning. People are starting to get up. All right, there's our dogs. The dogs have definitely woken up. Okay, and as we progress through the day, we get more crows, definitely less wolves. So there's our crows happening. And I'll just move through the rest of the day. The reason why I'm laughing is because the traffic one, I was kind of assuming that people would be going to work and coming back from work. So this is like horse rush hour. 5:30 in the afternoon. So, yeah. All right, we'll keep going. Okay, so and then eventually, you know, now it's dark again because the crickets are out, and we'll just go to midnight. Once again, then you start hearing the wolves howl again. Okay? So, there we go. Now, to get this to stop, I think I have to shut all these guys off. Okay. Alright. Well, there we go, horse. Okay, so that's ambience is related to time of day. Okay, and in Wise, there is an example of this. If you you can actually download their demo for free if you go to audiokinetic.com. And also, I'll have a link. What I'm going to do is that at videogameaudio.com, I'm going to put up my whole presentation, so this PowerPoint will be available online. So then that way you can just go to this slide, and then there'll actually be a place you can click on. So if you don't know how to spell audio kinetic, it's okay. I'll give you the PowerPoint, and then you can just click on it, right? Might as well make our work easy for us. Okay, so they have a similar example where you can basically blend between multiple samples, and then you just use this thing called a real-time parameter control to control the time of day, the same as I was doing there. And so just one thing to note is that when I'm showing you stuff in pure data, in general, that's not really how game audio is done for an actual game. That's how I'm prototyping stuff. So it's the same thing when you're working with, you know, if you're a painter and you want to produce a really big, complicated oil painting. You don't necessarily just start painting with oil. You actually do a lot of studies first. You know, you do sketches just with, you know, pencils, that kind of stuff, right? And so you do the same thing when you're working with art, but like digital art too. At least that's how I work. So I don't use the same method for prototyping, for doing my sketches, as I do for the final product. For the final product, it's often quite different, although there are some games that do use pure data as part of their engine. Spore by Electronic Arts is one of them. They collaborated with Brian Eno to make a generative music system, and that is running within a version of Pure Data. And so that's one of the nice things about Pure Data, is that the open source license that it has actually allows you to put it into a game. So that's pretty cool. Okay, so gunshots, of course, these are things that happen in the Wild West. So the creative challenge is, how do you make a sound that happens all the time still sounds satisfying? It's tricky. It's even tricky when you're working in film, right? And it's hard to record guns. And one of the biggest things, I'll just take a shot. Has anybody recorded real guns? No? Obviously, we're not in America. But yes, that's good. In Canada, we're not allowed to carry weaponry either, but it's a bit of a joke. But the thing is that, that recording guns is actually, it's a difficult process, okay? So the real difficulty behind recording guns is the fact that the actual sound of a gun is not really that interesting. Really, it's just like, it's an impulse. It's just like it's a very short, loud impulse. And so often, really what's interesting about a gunshot is the environment that it happens in. So if you look online, you can see how people record guns, you know, safely, right? There's one time I had a student of mine, and he was doing sound design for this game, Call of Duty. He wasn't working on the game itself, but he was doing a student sort of interpretation of the trailer. And so he found someone that actually had all the versions of those World War II guns. And so he went out into the woods with this guy and like recorded him. And this is in Canada, so you know, whatever. Guns still happen there. But there's a point, like he showed this making of video, and he borrowed a whole bunch of equipment from the film school that I used to work at. And you can see in one of the video shots is that the mic is right next to the gun. It's like in the path of a bullet, basically. So be careful when recording guns. So I don't know. I guess this guy that had all these World War II guns, he was somewhat of an expert, and so he actually got some amazing recordings from that. So if you really get into it, it really is an experience to record guns directly, if that's your thing. I've never done it myself, but seeing the recording of it was pretty amazing. So here with gunshots for games, often you're layering different recordings. Usually you'll have a recording of the gun really close perspective, then from, you know, several meters away, and then like 50 meters away, and then maybe like an ambient one of like, I don't know, maybe 100 meters or something, like far away, right? And then you mix levels from those different microphones, and then you also, of course, need to phase align them so that you get your transients to line up. and you figure out the best mix of those. And so the neat thing that you can do with games is that you can actually dynamically change those mix levels in the game. So if you're far away from it, of course, you can have more of a far away sound. But like I've shown here in the little diagram, is that you can actually combine different versions of the initial transient with the sort of mid or early reflections combined with the late reflections. And then on top of that, you can also add a little bit of variation from real-time signal processing, like real reverb that happens in the game, to really place it in the environment. So yeah, using printed effects is fine for gunshots. Okay, one of my big sort of research areas as an areas of interest has been granulation of sound. And it's not really granulation, like granular synthesis, as far as when you start using larger chunks, but I still sort of use that term. One of the instructors that I had, he was one of the first people to implement real-time granulation on a computer. And it's a really great tool for games because it allows you to take samples apart and really fit them with the image. So you split the sound into grains, and hopefully you do it on transients. And this is something that they actually... Has anybody played Need for Speed? Yeah, a couple nods. So they actually use granulation in Need for Speed for their engine sounds to make them more dynamic. So they'll use real recordings from the actual, you know, whatever it is, Ferraris and stuff like that, on a silent dynamometer. And they'll take those recordings and then they'll use an offline tool and chop those things up, and then they'll mix those in, you know, with their special blend of EA magic, right? Nobody really knows how it's done, of course. But using granulation is something that has happened in games, and it's a great way to make extra variation to the sound so that it doesn't sound so loopy, okay? So here, what I've done is this was an example from just, you know, sort of taking the Wild West theme of a train running over train rails or train trestles. So you can see where the impacts are happening spectrally. And then here, I'm taking, say, the first chunk here, and this one will actually get put into the third one over here, and they'll just sort of get scrambled around in time. So let's see if I can find this example here. Is it this one? Yeah, train pass by. Okay. So like I said, I've taken up little chunks and then I'm just resequencing them. So depending on where you edit them, you'll get different results. Because you can get pops and clicks to happen, if you edit on transients, that'll actually mask the where the joins happen. So I'm not using any crossfading here, I'm just butt fading them together. Okay. So, you know, the sound of a train running over rails. And you can see the sample number here changing every time it's triggering a new sample. Right? So, you know, it's a bit of a contrived example, because if you're going to work in games, really, you could probably make a 20-minute loop, and it would be good enough. But I wanted to have, like, this is something that you could also use with sort of, you know, maybe train engine sounds, but it would require me a lot more time to get it to sound sort of, you know, convincing. Okay? And then what you can do to make sounds, speech more interesting is that you can slightly change the playback rate if you granulate it. What will happen is that you can change the playback rate of the sample independent of the pitch. So if you've ever used Ableton Live, or even, I guess, in Pro Tools, it's Elastic Audio, right? And imagine being able to do that in real time. So thankfully, I do have an example. Is it going to work? I might have to close my other patch down. So let me see here. This will take me a little bit of time. Okay, so what we're going to do, I'm going to just close this guy down. No, I'm not going to close this one down. What I'm going to do is I'm going to find the lead patch of this thing. So many windows. Okay, and it's the last one, of course. Okay, this guy. And discard changes, yeah, sure. All right, so let's open this up. It's not this one, it's speech. Granular. Okay, so this is a patch that I put online, and so you can download it if you use Pure Data. It allows you to put a sound into surround. So the neat thing about granulation is what you could do is that you could take a monophonic recording and then you could granulize it into thousands of different grains. So say if you've got a rain sort of sound or like a sample, and then you can positionally locate those and mix them throughout three-dimensional space, which is pretty cool. So you don't have to do that manually. You can get the computer to do all the hard work. So this is something that you can do on the modern consoles. But for speech... Okay, great.
Dense with rusted roots.
Okay.
This new wilderness.
So,
crowded,
so I just mute this for a second. So what I'm doing here is I've got a speech sample that plays repeatedly, okay? And I'll show you the non-modulated one, so the one where I'm not actually dynamically changing the playback rate. So in other words, the speed that it moves through the grains, where it's chopped up the file, versus where I'm actually modulating those, okay? So first of all, I'll play it the first way and then the second way. So you can hear how it goes from sort of sounding pretty annoying to sounding at least a little bit more interesting. So once again, you could get around this problem by recording more samples, but the nice thing with this is that if you're on a limited platform like the Nintendo DS or another handheld platform and you've got speech samples that will be repeated, but that you don't want to sound super annoying the second or third time you've heard them, then you could use a method like this. Okay? So let's hear this.
Rusted roots, this new wilderness, clotted, dense with rusted roots. This new wilderness, clotted, dense with rusted roots. This new wilderness, clotted, dense.
That's hearing it.
This new wilderness.
You know, it's being granulated, but it's not changing the playback rate. If I change the playback rate just to really jitter it a little bit, then
this new wilderness, clotted, dense with rusted roots. This new wilderness, clotted, dense with rusted roots. This new wilderness, clotted.
It's the same sample.
With rusted roots. This new wilderness,
but it's a little less annoying. Although you're still getting that sibilance at the beginning. Not much I can do about that.
Clotted,
and then if you really want to get crazy with it, then you can do things like this.
This new wilderness,
right?
Clotted.
I make the pitch go way up here. I make the pitch go, let's say, take the modulation off. Or you may go to way down here. Or you can change the stretch it out. And that's a typical thing for granulation, yeah. So you can hear how short the grains are. They're 50 milliseconds in duration. And depending on your content, you can actually change that so that it fits the transients of the material better. Okay? So this is neat. You know, granulation, you can...
She's
able to talk really fast. Which is maybe what our poor translator is doing. Try and fit stuff into a romantic language. Okay? So this is a patch that, once again, it's not up there right now, but I'm going to make it available, say, what day is it today? Saturday. I'll make it available within a week, okay? I just need to tidy it up a little bit. And as you can see over here, I'm not going to really go over it a lot. I could have done a demo, but then I would have needed the audio output hardware. But you can actually map all those individual grains into a sort of a sound space. So you could make it so that it would actually distribute these grains randomly in this space. Or you can make it follow the position pointer, depending on how you're panning the sound around. So if you... Alright, I'll go over here. Should be panning, hopefully. Okay. But you can make that pan and surround as well. Okay? So that's the sample there, where you can take repetitive speech, and it can also work for other sounds as well. The problem with granulation is because you're cutting things into 50 millisecond chunks, is that you will get some problems with transients to try and preserve your transients. So that makes it sort of sound a little bit grainy sounding, okay? And that's sort of a tricky business. The thing that I want to try to do is figure out sort of smart places that you would chop those sounds up at. One of the things that say, like, you know, I know that depending on the amount of material, you might actually do that manually. You might even do that by hand. Okay? And just close the window, and we'll go back to the presentation. Okay, so yeah, simple synthesis. This is sort of a bit of a turn here. So I'm taking it from the synthesis or granulation of samples to where way back in the Nintendo days, right? This is back in the mid-80s, early 80s. I guess in 1986 for Canada anyways, that's when we got the Nintendo Entertainment System. And so this is the sound spec that we're using for Retro Theftendo. So all the sounds pretty much are made from two pulse waves, a triangle wave, and a noise channel. So I'm using a mod tracker, which is a module tracker, and allows the sound artist, being me. So sound artist is sort of the term that they use in Electronic Arts rather than sound designer. It's a change of terms, I guess. And really what you want to do as a sound artist is to have control over the sound. So the problem is that, yeah, you have control, but then you need to you need to control the control. You need to learn how to use that control. Okay? So I'll click on this, and hopefully it'll open up. So what I needed here is I needed a whistling sound, like a right? And so what I did is I actually recorded myself, and then I looked at the spectral content of that. And what I did here is that you can see that this is the triangle wave. It starts at C8, then it goes up to F sharp 8, then it goes down almost an octave, and then it goes back up to F sharp 8. Okay, so if we play this, okay, this might be a little bit loud, so yeah, it sounds like this, right? Right? Okay. So that's how I synthesized that sound, and it's using a little bit of noise at the beginning to simulate the, right, at the beginning. So this is what that sounds like, right, so, right at the beginning. And then the triangle part is just this, right? So it's not as convincing, but when you add the two together, right, sounds pretty cool, okay? Because the initial transients, they're typically like, they're not correlated, they're sort of noisy. And so if you put a little bit of random noise in there, you can kind of fake it. So I did this for a lot of different sounds. I did like, other, so maybe, you know, to keep with the Wild West, this would be sort of simulating you talking to your, like, whistling for your horse, right? For Retro City Rampage, I did a lot of car engine sounds. I did like helicopters, all of these things just from synthesis using these four waveforms. And I also did music as well. And there's two other composers on this as well. Okay, so anyways, I just wanted to show you that as a little bit of a side topic. Train sounds, you know, we can combine three different loops, being from far away, medium, and then close by, close perspective, right? And then there's different things that we can do to make this sound more realistic. What I'll do is I'll try to pull up my patch again that I was using before and see how that sounds for us. Doing this, clicky click. Okay, my game audio code is down here, and here, examples, and I think it's called, train, right. So what I'm doing here is I'm just using those three different perspectives in making it so that I can dynamically change the way that, you know, distance-wise from the player the train would be, okay? It doesn't quite mesh together on the crossfades because I didn't spend enough time to correlate the rhythm of the engine sound. So the rhythms don't quite line up. So you need to spend a little bit more time to make it more realistic sounding. So let's see if I can get this to work. Okay. We've got sound there, and we have sound there, and let's see if we have sound here. This is the fun thing of working with demos. Oh, the volume's all the way down. Oh, there we go. Okay, perfect. So we've got a train. There it is, far away. And then see the intensity on the bottom? You know, becomes more intense. It's coming towards you. All right, make it sort of fade out. Go like that. And you can definitely hear the crossfade points, but let's try that again, and I won't talk over it. Right? Okay, let's turn that guy off. And something that you could add there is, of course, yeah, like low-pass filtering as well. This is something that they do with every single sound in Halo, is that they actually have a far perspective sound, and then they have a close perspective sound. And the neat thing with that is that instead of using just a low-pass filter, is that you are actually have total creative control over the way that far-distance sound actually will be, you know, when it crossfades from, it's sort of like, the way that they sort of explain it is it's like depth of field. It's like beyond a certain distance, things become kind of blurry. So that's the way that you can kind of mix things, is that you sort of make things blurry by making them fade into that far perspective sound. So that means you don't actually have to have the same distance for each single sound. You can actually tune it for every sound, so that you can make things so that they kind of get blurry at a certain distance that makes sense to you, right? And that's definitely a tricky thing, is that because the computer's controlling all these things, is that you want to tell the computer the right thing to do, but because it's running on its own, it's going to make its own decisions that are not really going to work with the way that you're thinking artistically. So it's always a challenge of figuring out what the computer should be thinking about and the way that you should be directing it, right? So having manual control sometimes is good, but then that means you have to define that distance value for every single sound in the game. Plus, you also have to provide content, like basically twice the amount of content for every single sound. But then the neat thing is that the mix becomes, for their game, for them, they found that it became a lot clearer. Okay? So, all right. But there often isn't enough time. Okay, so that sort of ends my little demo section there. Okay, often there isn't enough time, so you know, people will go with what they know. So in this case, you know, you might not necessarily have time to make two versions of every single sound. So it's just like, yeah, that's fine. You know, and there's a long time required to tune that. Remember that train sound? Like, I would need to spend more time with that to make it sound more realistic. In a video game sort of, you know, development time span, I don't necessarily have the time to do that. Okay? So, and the other thing is that, you know, when people are coming over from film to games, they will not necessarily be thinking about audio in a behavioral sense or a procedural sense. So it's a real sort of jump of faith, leap of faith, to figure out all those new techniques, synthesis, you know, like I was showing you there, how that will actually influence, and does it actually add anything to the game, you know, at the end of the day? Are you just going like, yeah, but I could make that like mobile synthesis, you know, when you kick that particular barrel, it's going to sound like different every time you kick it. And it's like, yeah, but how many times are you going to kick a barrel? Well, in that Western game, maybe you kick a barrel a lot. So maybe it's worth your while. If you don't, you could just stick one sample on it and say, yeah, it's good enough. So the problem is you have to balance these things all the time. So yeah, it requires more CPU, more DSP, and synthesis to put these kind of procedural things together. So it's like the Terminator here. It's like, you know, balance the creative with the technical. That's really like, you know, what we're looking at the start, what the challenge is. Okay, here's some current research, just sort of a bit of a thing for you you might want to look at, is taking an actual recording of a sound and then granulating it and then making it fit the picture of the video game. So in this case, you can see there's a little duck and it's rolling down a little plane. And then what you would do using the system is that you would record that and maybe you could get this, you know, the duck to go down the plane. Maybe, you know, it takes 2 seconds or something. And then what you can do is that you can have that same event happen, but it takes 4 seconds or 5 seconds in the actual game, and it will actually be smart about the way that it splits up the grains and replays or resynthesizes that particular sound event. So that's kind of neat, is to look at these things. It's sort of in synthesis, it's kind of like analysis and resynthesis, trying to figure out how to take an existing recording, in this case, like, you know, sample-based, and then twisting it so that it fits the image of the game. Okay, so just to review, yeah, we've got, you know, using PD, procedural ambience, time of day ambience, horses, hooves, trains. So there's a system that I came up with, you know, because I was just sort of moving sliders around, is that you can, I've made it so that you can actually play like a mod in Half-Life 2 and get it to communicate with open sound control. And this is really the same way as it would work in games. Is that you've got your system where you've got all your audio being generated, and then there's the Xbox that's communicating using Ethernet and talking to your system, like, say, Wyze, and generating the sound in real time. You can do granulation layering and stuff like that. So that's prototyping. I'm going to go through this faster because I'm finding that. I want to get to questions. Here's the pipeline. You got that? Great. Okay, perfect. Okay, now I'll go back. So it's really simple. Really, the important part is that the game is generating events and it's talking using open sound control, which is kind of like MIDI. So it's using MIDI over Ethernet and it's talking to your sound engine. Okay. Once again, you can download the slide and look at it in detail. But that's really what the basic idea of the slide is. In PD, we've already talked about it for a while. Like I was saying, it was used on Spore. The problem is that it's slow. So if you want it to work in games, you're going to have to compile it. In Half-Life 2, for those that don't know, it's a very popular game, right? It's been re-released several times. And the neat thing is that a lot of people have made mods for this, so modifications to the game. Left 4 Dead is one example. And you can make your own games using this system, okay? So these modifications can be simple or they can be quite complicated, all right? And using Microsoft, they have a free version of their compiler, their C++ compiler. So you can download that for free and compile your own games. And basically, for the cost of Half-Life 2, which is $9.99 online, you can make a system where you can make your own professional game. It just requires a bit of time. Okay? I was going to go through a little bit of a demo, but it's fine. Really, what I was going to show you is that you can play the game, and it'll trigger the PD stuff in real time. Okay? But what I thought, because I saw a lot of students, I added this just recently to the presentation, is that you might be curious about how you might get a job in game audio. This is a picture of Electronic Arts. It's a gorgeous facility. Like I said, there's about, you know, between 1,000 and 1,500 people that work there. This is in British Columbia. And, how do you get a job in games? Well, you can research game audio online and look at student sites. Participate in forums online, like the Sound Design Forum on Yahoo. It's a good one. Play games, right? Hopefully you play games, right? And this is quite interesting, because when I was working at the Vancouver Film School, I would always get flack. Like, I would get in trouble from the other instructors. They would always be laughing at me, because they'd be like, hey, look at you. You're always playing games. And it's just like, yeah, but that's my job. Right? So it's good. If you're interested in games, you should play games, okay? So it's just, these days, I don't play a lot of games, but when you're getting into it, you need to play games. And then learn tools like WISE and FMOD. These are solutions of adding your content to a game that it's really like the Pro Tools or the Nuendo of game.